Yom HaZikaron, Memorial Day, Israel's Memorial Day, is a difficult day. And we say in the tefillah, in the morning, Kulam Ahuvim, they were all beloved, Kulam Berurim, Kulam Giborim, they were all strong, Kulam Kedoshim, they're all holy. V'chulam osim be'ema u'v'yirah ratzon konam. And all of them do with awe, with strength, the will of their Creator. V'chulam potchim et piyem b'kdusha u'v'tara, b'shira u'v'zimra, u'mvachim u'mshabchim, u'farim u'maritzim u'magdishim, et shem ha'el ha'melech ha'gadol, ha'gibor v'anora kadoshu. And all of them have become living kedoshe Hashem. I want to tell you a couple of stories, because I don't know any other way to share this day with you. Some of these stories I told you during the year, but I think it behooves us to remember them today. The first was an amazing boy. He was a project for me. I walked into my first job interview at Innovation Well as a Madrich like 25 years ago, and he was sitting in the hall. And he looked like the kid who'd gotten into trouble. His name was Dvir.
Sadly, I knew you'd be here.
Yeah. Can't see Alex.
Yeah. Yeah. You going to Renata later?
Yeah.
I tell them that I think of them. That may surprise them, but I do.
Sorry
for interrupting here.
No, but. No. So he was sitting in the hall, and he looked like a kid who'd gotten into trouble. And I was basically having my job interview for my first job as a madrich in Innovation Well in a high school in Efrat. And I sat with the principal and whatever. And while I was sitting out in the hall, I started talking to this kid. He had like what we call in Hebrew pilpel, you know, like pepper. He was like a chai kaze. And we hit it off, and we got into this great discussion, and they called me into the interview. And he, at the time, was going into 11th grade. So, afterwards, I'm sitting in the interview, and he said, okay, you know, we want you, you know, you've got the job, whatever. And at the end, I said, tell me something, that boy out in the hall, Dvir, is he going to be one of my guys? So he looks up at me, like a little surprised. He said, actually, I don't think so, because I don't think he's going to be here next year. I'm pretty sure we're going to let him go. So I don't know what made me say this. You know, sometimes you want to impress the new boss. I don't know. I said, well, if you decide to keep him, I'll make him my personal project. So he looked at me in surprise with a smile, and he wrote it down, and he said, okay, I'm going to remember that. And when I got there in the fall for Elul, and we're having all the usual orientation meetings, and they gave me the 11th grade, and at the end of the meeting with the head of the dormitories, he said, by the way, I understand you've decided that Dvir Mor Chaim is going to be your project. So I was like really surprised they remember that, but I kept my word, and I made him my project. And he was an amazing boy, and he stuck it out. He actually became one of the leaders of the class. He was the guy who put things together when we went on Tiulim. He was the chevraman. He made sure the Shuk Purim ran kmo shtzarich. When he graduated, I still remember his parents coming over to me, and I gave him a big hug. They never knew this whole story, And we kind of stayed in touch. He went to Eli, to the Michina Kedam Tzvait. And a year and a half later, he was drafted into Tzanchanim. One night, I'm finishing my smicha studies, my last year in Alon Shvut. And I'm sitting in our kol apartment, and I turn on the TV to watch the news. There's no worse way to hear this kind of news. There was a takrit, there was an incident in Lebanon. An officer had made a mistake in navigations. And they announced that on the way, four boys had been killed and a number wounded. They had sort of circled back on themselves and not realized it. It was a foggy night. They were coming back from the security zone in South Lebanon. Some of them thought the others were terrorists. They opened fire on each other. They got into a dutz. I felt like I got punched in the stomach. I remember I gave this this scream, and my wife came running in from the kitchen. And the next day we were at the Levaya. And every once in a while, I see the Mor Chaim. Such a difficult name, Mor Chaim, bitter life. He's buried here on Har Herzl. And he will forever be 20 years old. He would now be, I don't know, 35. All that work, all that effort. Nothing left but visits to family and moments at memorials. And then there was Benji. After we leave our Herzl, I'm going to go to Ranana, visit their family. I thought that I got it. I thought I understood what loss was. I thought that I understood what it means to lose someone because I lost some good friends. I have to tell you, until you lose someone in your family, it's not the same. With a friend, you put it into its place, and it comes out when you need it to, and you can put it aside. In fact, Yom HaZikaron is difficult because it kind of brings back all these memories, and unlike the person for whom it's not a day of memory that you heard yesterday, for me it's a memory, and I don't necessarily think about him every day. But when it's a family member, every simcha, every bar mitzvah, every birth, I was talking to Shimon, his brother, once. He was talking about the fact that he's now married. His younger brother, Shimon, looked up to him. Chaval Azman. And he realized that his kids are never going to know his brother. They're just never going to know. They're never going to know this amazing boy. Benji was, he made Aliyah when he was 4 years old. He came with, his family from England. And at the time, I was in the army, and all of a sudden, I had a cousin to stay with every Shabbos. And you know, if you're a 4-year-old boy, and me and my older brother used to go there, my brother was also in the army then. So like, you know, guy shows up and he's your cousin. He's in uniform. He's got a gun. He's got a helmet. He's got a flak vest. So he's like God. So he would love it. I mean, we used to hide our guns under, you know, one of the beds because his dad didn't want him playing with the guns. And one Friday afternoon, he walks out, he found my helmet, my flak vest, because we used to come down from Lebanon with all our gear. And you know, he put my boots on, and he kind of clumps in at 5 years old with this big grin on his face. Got that image in my mind. I could still see him like it was yesterday. Just like walking out with this big smile, you know, killing ourselves laughing. Didn't know then that it wouldn't be funny. And he grew up, and you know how things are. He went into the Midrashiyah, and he, you know, had his challenges in high school. And then he went to Eli, the same Mechina Kedam Tzvait, and he found himself. And he joined up with Egoz. And he was in one of the most elite units in the Israeli army. He was MP, company commander. After he died, we started to hear all these stories about him. There was a Chadirat Mechablim, two terrorists, stole in one night into one of the Yishuvim in Gush Katif. I think Alei Sinai. And I read in the papers the next day that there were two mechablim and that chayalim hista'aru, you know, the soldiers found them and they charged them. And only after his funeral, like years later, did I find out that that was him. He never talked about it. He wasn't a Schwitzer. He realized they got there to the makom. Somebody was killed. Somebody was wounded. He saw where the esh mechablim, where the fire was coming from. And on his own, with his gun and his neshek, he just charged up the hill and took out the terrorists. All his own. And then went about his business. And one of his friends called him up, like, that night, and, you know, heard it on the news, and he knew that he was stationed there, and he heard that it was a katzin or whatever, and he said, Tagid, Benj, zata? Was it you? He goes, Azov, let it go. In the summer, in June of 2006, he finally got married. And I made the cardinal error of we got the invitation and I threw out the envelope. In Israel, you have to keep the envelope because, you know, people don't have a lot of money. And sometimes they invite you. And sometimes they invite, you know, your kids, whatever. So we didn't know. Did it say on the invitation, Binny and Dorit, or did it say all our kids? So my wife was, like, annoyed. She said, like, you threw out the envelope. Are we supposed to go with the kids, not go with the kids? So I said, Mom, bye, I'll call up Judith. So I called up his mom. She's my first cousin. And I said to her, look, I feel embarrassed, but it's Besedda. Like, if you know, I just want to know. I don't want to not show. She goes, what are you talking about? Bring all the kids. I want all the kids to come. How often do we get to have a simcha? I want everybody should be there, all the kids and all the grandkids. Everybody, bring all your children. So we did. We brought all our kids. And Bemet, it was unusual. All the cousins were there. Everybody came. And it was an amazing wedding. And I have this image. You know, like when the dancing circle, and they put the chatan and the kala in the middle. And then And then kind of something happens and guys are fooling around or juggling or whatever. So at one point, Benji jumps up. And you have to understand, they were this incredible couple. They had this, he was a very tall, kind of handsome guy. And very good looking. And his wife, Ayala, just a gorgeous girl. And I have this image. She's got her head thrown back, like long blonde hair. And she's laughing hysterically like a Kala does. And he grabbed the mic and he starts singing her this song in Argentinian because they originally come from Argentina. And they broke up once for a couple months. Every time she would go through a tough time, she would play this song. So he decided for the wedding to learn this song by heart. So he was singing as Benji could only sing. Wasn't giving up his day job. And so everybody was in hysterics. It was like this moment out of a movie. It was this picture-perfect moment. And then the Second Lebanon War broke out, literally at the end of their Sheva Brachot, and he got a call. He was actually signed up to go to university, and he was supposed to be done. He had signed for the fast track. He was eventually going to become a battalion commander, but he was being given 2 years off to go and study. He was registered for university in the fall in Kiryat Ono, and said, I have to go. And she didn't know that she would never see him again. And exactly 4 weeks to the day, on the Friday, 4 weeks from his Ufruf, literally 3.5 weeks from his wedding, his father stood up at the Bet Kvarot and he said, you know, we were all gathered here 4 weeks ago to celebrate Benji's wedding, and here we are again 4 weeks later, then we're saying goodbye to him. Then I remember Ayala, she was Mishtatachat ala Kever, the same girl, you know, just this incredibly fine moment, just transformed. You know, just completely lost. Mishtatachat. She threw herself on top of the kever. And his father stood up at the hesped. He said, you know, everybody went back to England. We had such a simcha. And now everybody came back to bury him. You know, his Shabbat Sheva Brachot, his brother, Shimon, stood up to give a Dvar Torah. And he was talking about how special his brother was and how much he loved him and how much he looked up to him and what a role model he was for him. Shimon was also in Golani. He also eventually was then Katzin. And he started crying. And his brother, Sheva Brachot, you know, celebrating his upcoming wedding, but like crying hysterically. And it was weird. And Benji got up and they went to each other and they gave each other this big hug. And it was beautiful, like, you know. And at his hesped, at his levaya, he said, now I know why I was crying. You know, this country, it hangs on a thread. You just never know. Kira'am b'yom bahir, like thunder on a clear day, you just don't see it coming. He was, I remember him at his wedding. He was just bigger than life. He was 27 years old when he died. He was an elite commander. And he was just starting to be a husband. His younger brother wasn't married, is now married, children. And Benji will always be 27. And then there was Danny. When I was when I was 18, I came to yeshiva. And I decided I wanted to go into the army. And after a year of learning, I realized I wasn't ready to go in. So I decided to take another year, shun a bet, before I went to the army. And I figured it'd be a smart thing to do to get to know the guys I was going in with. They were a year younger than me, but they were shun aleph. So every night I would sit at the Israeli table. You know, like Americans, Israelis, they sit at different tables. And I would sit with these guys, but I really didn't know much Hebrew. And it was actually a very torturous experience. They would sit at the table and make all their jokes and their chizbatim and whatever. And I didn't really understand, so I would just sit there and smile. And my conversations with them consisted of, like, you know, please pass the salt, can I have the chatzilim? And my friends, because I had a lot of friends who were Americans who stayed Chanabet in Gush, and they would look at me, they could see like I was struggling with this, and they would say to me, like, why are you sitting with them? Come, sit with us. I said, no, you know, I'm going in with them, I want to get to know them. I said, you know what, don't torture yourself. Sit here, you'll get to know them. And then one night, after about 3 months of this, right, I'm sitting at the table, dinner's almost over, and I know all these guys' names, but I don't really know them, because, like, they're not letting me in the club, and I don't know how to do that. And one of them turns around, and he was like the leader of the pack. Tall, good-looking, blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. He looks at me. He says, "Ata tislachli, you'll forgive me, but Mata Osepo, like, what are you doing here? Like, why do you sit here?" I was, like, in shock. Like, my mouth came open. And I was just collecting my stuff onto a tray. I said, "You know what? I said, I thought I would get to know you guys because I'm going into the army with you. But I guess I was wrong. Sorry." So I pick up my tray and I walk away and I figure, okay, this is stupid. I'll just have to get to know the army. He comes over to me later in the base manders, and he says, "You're going into the army with us?" And I said, "Yeah." And he started talking to me. He said, "Well, maybe you want to have a chavruta." So I figured this would be amazing, right? I'll have a chavruta with one of the Israelis. I'll get to know them. I said, "Sure." He said, "The only thing is, like, all my chavruta are booked up. The only time I have is like 1:30. Would you be willing to learn at 1:30 for like half an hour?" At 1:30, like 1:30 is the break. Like, that's the only time of the day in Gush where I used to go grab a nap or play some ball, get some air. But then I thought, like, I want to do this. So I said, "All right, Pesedo, you know, we'll do it at 1:30. So the next day I show up at 1:30. And, Nodani. 1:30, 1:45, 2:15. Now I'm, like, getting annoyed already because, like, I gave up my break. But at this point, there's no point in going back to the room. So I sat and learned until Mincha. After Mincha, I go up on the rampa where he used to sit and I go find him. And I say to him, like, "Makara, like, what happened? I thought we were going to learn at 1:30. He looks at me and goes, no, 1:30 in the morning. So 1:30 in the morning. He said, "Yeah, I have a chavruta during the break in the yeshuv, but I finished my last chavruta at 1:15. I figured, like, we'll grab half an hour, 1:30 in the morning." I thought he was out of his mind, but I figured, like, you know, this is my opportunity. So every night, for the better part of 7 months, we learned from 1:30 till 2 in the morning. And from that day on, he made it his business to take me around, to introduce me to every guy, to make sure I knew the fellows. Whenever there was a birthday party in one of the rooms, he would schlep me along if they did a teal, you know, whatever it was. And he was younger than me, but he took me under his wing. He was a man with enormous willpower. A man. He was a boy. He had scoliosis. And he was determined to get into Krav. He wanted to be a battle-worthy unit. So he wore a back brace every day for like the better part of a year. He would take it off to go running and put it back on. It went up and around his neck. He became known because, you know, we came back actually. We came back in the middle of our army service. For 6 months, we got a break to go to yeshiva. And we picked up where we left off. And I remember one day I was walking out of the Beis Medrash. Remember when we were in Gush, I showed you where the phones used to be. Some of you may remember. So I remember I was standing right there. There's a whole bank of phones. And I see Danny's talking on the phone. And he's got like this funny, like he looks like he's like having a conversation with a girl. And somebody told me Danny met a girl, but he was very private about these things, you know, in yeshiva or whatever. And he's like giggling on the phone. I never heard Danny giggle before. I mean, he was a funny guy. He had an amazing smile. So I walk over to see what's going on. You know, I'm going to give him some serious ribbing. And he turns around and he flashes me one of his amazing smiles. And then he goes back to the phone and he's giggling. So afterwards, you know, and then I suddenly realized, I get closer and realize he's talking in English. And my mouth dropped open. And I'm watching him, he's talking in perfect English with an English accent. Now I had known him for 2 years, I never knew he spoke English. So he finishes his phone call and he comes over to me, you know, gives me a chapach on the back. I said, "You speak English?" He said, "Sure, I speak English. My parents are English, what do you think? You speak perfect English? You made me break my teeth over Hebrew all this time and you speak perfect English?" He puts his hand on my shoulder. He looks at me. He's a tall guy. He says, "Well, if I would have spoken to you in English, you would never have learned Hebrew." That was Danny. Upashutaya. He was just bigger. He was bigger than this world. I remember in when they were up in South Lebanon, towards the end, he managed to track down Rav Amital to ask him a question. Everybody who's ever been to South Lebanon knows that there are beautiful cherry orchards. And when you do, especially in the springtime, this was the month of Adar, so there are beautiful cherry orchards. And you go on patrol and you pick the cherries. They're really good. They're owned by non-Jews. There's no truma, no miser, nothing. And he suddenly realized there might be an Arab who owns these. So maybe you're not allowed to take them. Maybe it's gezel. Maybe it's theft. So he tracked down Rav Amital to ask him the shal. And you have to understand, it's not an easy thing. They didn't have cell phones back then. He had to get an army line, use up his 3 minutes for a phone call, Nach from Lebanon. Rav Amital is not a person who just sits around waiting for phone calls. He finally managed to track him down, and he asked him a shaila, "Are you allowed to pick cherries on patrol in Lebanon?" And Rav Amital said, "No, actually, you're not. Even if it's a non-Jew, you're not. There are different reasons. You know, it might be gezel." So he made it his business. I'm sure they loved him for this, to tell all the guys in the unit that they're not allowed to pick the cherries because it's Gezel. And this story somehow leaked out, and it made all the papers. That there was a Chayal, a Hesdernik, who made sure that soldiers wouldn't steal cherries when they walked on patrol in South Lebanon in no man's land. And then I'm sitting on a bus, and I'm on my way down to Shizafon in the middle of Kostini. And we get word on the radio that Mishpachat Mozhits lost their son and that there's a military funeral in Yerushalayim. And Avi Elimelech, who was the only other guy I knew in the unit who knew Dani Mozhits, came over to me and said, "You think it could be Dani?" I said, "Nah, somebody would have called. They would have gotten word to us, like, that's ridiculous." So he said, "Well, you know what? I'm going to go because maybe it's Dani. And if not, Dervachti, I'll get a day off." And I was having a tough time in Kostinim, you know, and I said, I don't want to miss a day of study, so I'll... You know, so we went over to our samach, and the samach said, you know, the katzin, he said, "Look, we can only spare one of you because you need certain numbers for a crew." So I said, "You go. You knew him from high school, whatever, fine." Then we get to Mitzpeh Ramon, and I pick up a newspaper, and I see that not only Dani, but Didi Cohen were killed in a terrible ambush in Gesher Kasmia. And that was Dani. And you know what? I never really got it. This was Didi Cohen. And this was Dani Mozhits. I never really got it until my wedding. We have a thing in the Chevra that we invite, you know, his family whenever we have a simcha. So his parents came to my chuppah. But they couldn't stay. And they came over to say goodbye. And I suddenly understood why they couldn't stay. See, I invited them to my chuppah, but they weren't in my chuppah. They were at Dani's chuppah. They were standing there under the chuppah and they were thinking, who was the girl he was supposed to marry? Who are the grandchildren that they'll never bounce on their knee? All the events. He died on the 19th of Adar. He's actually buried in Chaf Badar, that's what's on his kever. He was 20 years old, Benaflo. Born in England. A boy with amazing potential. Torah Shgura Befiv, he lived Torah. And all the things that I've done since 1984, he'll never do. He would be 45 years old now. You'd look at him as an older guy. But he's 20 years old forever. He's a 19-year-old. And he's turning around in my mind's eye, and he's flashing that amazing smile. I want to read you a parak of Navi in Shmuel Aleph, and then we'll walk up to his kever. I don't know if we'll get all the way to his kever before the tzfirah. Wherever we're standing for the siren, that's where we're meant to be. You have a moment when the siren goes off to just stop. There are tens and tens of thousands of people here today from every type of background you can imagine. Charedim, Chilonim, Datiim, Leumim, left, right, Zionist, anti, it doesn't matter. They all pile in here. There isn't anybody in this country who doesn't know somebody. And tonight you'll see, tonight we're going to celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut, and when you get back to town, it's an unbelievable party. And before we celebrate that party, we take a moment to appreciate what we lost. So many boys. So many boys. 22,000. And every one of those boys is a family and parents and brothers and sisters and friends and cousins. I went last year to Ranana. There must have been 300 people who showed up at their house. And not just Stam. People who really feel the loss of Benji Hillman. And that's one boy. 22,000 boys. Shaul HaMelech goes up into the Gilboa Mountains to head off the Plishtim, the Philistines, who are not historically linked, but spiritually linked to the enemies that we've had ever since. And he fights battle with them. And he and his son die. They're killed in the battle. Shaul HaMelech, David HaMelech's mentor, with all the challenges that that entailed later. And Jonathan, his closest friend. And the Philistines come up to find the bodies. And they find the bodies of Shaul and his sons lying dead, gone, on the mountains of Gilboa, when you ride up the Jordan Valley, you see the Gilboa mountains above you, when you hit Beit Shan. Vayichatu et rosho, and they cut off his head. Vayishatu et kelav, and they take his armor. Vayasimu et kelav bet ashtarot vet gviyato taku b'chomat Beit Shan. And they hang his body on the wall of Beit Shan. I remember once seeing a picture of Palestinians in Lebanon, Syrians actually. There was one pilot that went down in the first Lebanon war, and they captured his body, and they cut off his head, and they stuck his body out of the trunk of a car, and they dragged him around the streets of Beirut, of Damascus. And there was a grinning picture of soldiers sitting on top, Syrians sitting on top holding his head. And I remember thinking, we could never do that. Ishtabach shemo, that we could never do that. Vayakumu kol Yishchayil. Vayishmu elav yoshvei Yavesh Gilad. So the Jews in Yavesh Gilad heard that Shaul the king's body was hanging on the wall of Beit Shan. Vayakumu kol Yishchayil. And so the men of war, they arose. Vayilchu kol alayil. They walked all night. Vayikhu et gviyat Shaul. And they took the body of Shaul vet gviyot banav and the bodies of his sons michomad Beit Shan. They went under cover of darkness to bring his body home. The stories of Israeli soldiers staying all night in Krav. My cousin, Danny Gomez, who was a helicopter pilot who went down in the Second Lebanon War, was a special unit of Maglan, most of whom showed up to his funeral, who stayed all night in enemy territory to guard his body until in the morning they could find all of it and bring it home to Kfura. And at his burial, his mother, Miriam, publicly thanked the soldiers who risked their lives to bring his body home. Vayhi bayom ha-shlishi, on the third day, v'hinei ha'ish ba min ha-machaneh, me'im Shaul uv'gadav kruim, v'adama al rosho, and a man came, and his clothes were torn, and dirt was on his head. And he comes to David ha-melech, b'va'ol David v'ipol arza v'ishtach, and he bows to David, v'yom elav David, ma ya davar agil, what's going on? People ran, and many fell. And David finds out that Shaul and his beloved Yonatan are dead. And David carries his clothes, and he tears them. And they mourn and they cry. Ad ha'erev. Al Shaul v'al Yonatan beno. He cries for Shaul and for Yonatan, but for the people of Israel. And he laments this lament. Al Shaul val Yonatan beno, on Shaul and on Yonatan his son. And you will hear these words after the siren at 11 in the official ceremony of the State of Israel and in every military cemetery and every official ceremony. Hatzvi Yisrael, O great deer of Israel, al bamotecha chalal, you have been laid waste on your high places. Ech naflu giborim, how the mighty have fallen. Al tagidu begat, al tefasru bechutzot Ashkelon, pen tismachna bnot plishtim, pen talozna bnot arlim. Don't let it spread that the daughters of the Philistines should rejoice. Harei bagilboa al tal, let no dew fall on the Gilboa mountains. Ve'al matar lechem, and no rain fall on you. Ustei Trumot, and on the village of Stei Trumot near Beit Shan, Kisham Nigal Magen Giborim Magen Shaul Beli Mashiach Vashamen, for there were defiled the shields of the great ones. Shaul v'Yonatan, Haneavim v'Animim, beloved and so pleasant b'chayehem in their lives, uvemotam lo nifradu, and in their deaths they were not separated. Minisharim kalu, they were swifter than eagles, me'arayot gaviru, and they were mightier than lions. Benot Yisrael el Shaul b'chena. Ech naflu giborim, the mighty have fallen betocha milcha. Yonatan al bamotecha chalal. Tzar li alecha, achi Yonatan. So painful to me over you, my brother Yonatan. Na'amta li me'od. You were so pleasant to me. Ech naflu giborim ve'avduch le'milchama. How the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war destroyed and laid waste. Yivrachenu Hashem, Hashem should bless us, that this year there should be no more new graves dug, no more families to get that knock at the door in the middle of the night, no more cousins who lose cousins and brothers and siblings and uncles. And Yiratzon that that we should find a way to live up to the memory of those who fell and to create the life that they deserved us to create. As much as was said yesterday, there are different ways of looking at this day. For me, this day is two things. It's a day to appreciate how many gave how much that we could have this state. And that lays down the gauntlet for us as to what we choose to do with that. And it's a day, I think more than any other day in the Jewish calendar, where we get to experience oneness. Make this a day with no ktatot, no complaints, no pain, no little things. When we finish, we're going to walk up. You might get lost. You know, we might lose each other because it's crowded. And we might not get all the way to the kever by the tefillah. Wherever you are in the tefillah, just stop. Take a moment. After the tefillah, you're allowed to walk. You'll hear on the ramkolim, on the microphones, all the ceremonies and speeches of the great, you know, the prime minister and the defense minister and whoever else. Go explore. We purposely do not have a bus going back because it was impossible to do. Last year we saw it doesn't work. By the way, if anybody here didn't bring money to take a bus back, you can get buses back outside. Please come over to me right now and I'm happy to lend you some money. I don't mind. And make use of this day. What time do you have to be back in the yeshiva?
We're leaving at 4:30 tomorrow. Well, we'll be back by 3:00.